two more classes together, and the purpose here will be to give you a very well-rounded picture of the Sfarim in Neviim Achronim and Ksuvim that you're likely to be either teaching in Tevalabatim or to be asked to teach in the schools. There are two different types of schools that you may end up in. One is sort of like the school I went to for high school, the MTA. And the Tanakh teachers that we had were not in any way Tanakh experts. I mean, no, nothing to be Chas v'Shalom to take away from them. They were great Talmudists, but they were not steeped or trained in teaching Tanakh. So in a school like that, you'll get away. They're not going to really hold you to do anything. They're just going to give you a Yeshayahu, say, here, teach this, teach seven Radaks, and that you choose, and two Targum Yonasans over the year, and try to teach these Prakim, and that's it. So it's not going to be very challenging for you. But on the other hand, more likely, is you'll be thrust into a situation where they're very makbid on what you're doing. They'll want lesson plans from you. They're going to want materials from you, what you're doing, what you intend to do that day, what are your homeworks, things of that sort. And you don't want to be left out, just totally in the cold. So as far as the Sfarim you're likely to be asked to teach in the Neviim altogether, so Yeshua Shoftim Shmor Malachim will always be on the table. I find that Malachim is mostly not anymore, but Yeshua Shoftim and Shmuel Aleph and Shmuel Bet very much. And Malachim, I gave out as part of the Choveret a very nice detailed list of all the kings from both dynasties with little snippets of what each king did. It's a very wonderful overview that you could probably teach in two or three classes of the whole history of Sefer Malachim. Some very creative schools might want to do something with Malachim and Divrei Hayamim, but what's much more likely is that if they do teach Malachim, let's say in eighth grade, they will be asking you to teach topics in Malachim, such as prophet and king. Prophet and king means Achia HaShiloni and Shlomo, or Achia HaShiloni and Yeravam ben Nebat, Eliyahu and Ahav, Elisha and Yehoram, Elisha and Ahaziahu. You might have Zechariah and Yoash. They'll take the four or five places. I mean, if that's the name of the course, obviously, you have to know something in order to find out which ones to teach. But they usually tell you that. In fact, I once devised the course. It was just Elisha and Eliyahu. That was it. Elisha and Eliyahu and the kings they worked with. That was the whole thing. In fact, it was mostly from the standpoint of the prophets. So if you start with Eliyahu, you're already just in the middle of Malachim, towards the latter third of Malachim Aleph. And the good first 10, 12 prakim of Malachim Bet, that's already something to cover. You'd be surprised how much you can cover with just those prakim. The schools are not like they used to be out to finish the whole book. My curriculum for Neviim Rishonim tells you which psukim to stress in each chapter. And more important, at the end, this appears actually at the beginning of the curriculum, is just the two or three psukim to make sure they know in each perek that if they know these psukim, and if they know Haratzachta v'gam Yerashta, and they can tell you who said that and what is its background, they'll know what that chapter is about. They'll be able to take from there and extrapolate to know what the perek is. Remember, your first goal is what are they going to remember from this class, right? There's no purpose in teaching them something that they're going to forget either right after the class is over or right after the test is over. So these are some of our goals. I think that even already earlier in the Neviim Rishonim, there's another popular class that's being given called the Love of Eretz Yisrael, where you can actually teach geography through the Sefer. Right on that, I get there's great new material from Mosad Harav Kook. Right? It was a famous sefer about 40 years ago called Atlas Karta. Atlas Karta, an atlas that gave maps of all the major stories, starting from Torah and going straight through Tanakh. And now the Mosad Harav Kook has done something very simple. Because, you know, the Rav Kook, you know, the Torah, the Mosad Harav Kook series that, you know, that has the pink covers that are very popular. So they have a lot of maps on each page. They've just taken most of those maps and made it into one separate book. Right? So that is, that's something that's extremely popular. And if you can really be creative, remember, Yehoshua and Shoftim are usually taught in fourth and fifth grade. These days, if schools, this is not so much for you to do, but some of the very creative schools are doing is that they connect their curriculum of Chumash with a curriculum of Nevi'im. So that in Chumash, they're up to Vayichi, and in Yaakov's Bracha, or Mamish, they're acted out in Sefer Yehoshua. With what the tribes end up doing, with where they end up living, with how they separate, how they scattered, whatever it is. So you can show while doing the Nevi'im, the Torah curriculum, how it manifests itself in the Nevi'im curriculum. Now I'm working on it was a few books at the same time, but I'm working on a book that goes through Nevi'im Rishonim. And you saw the book, the one I just finished called Conflict Resolution in the Early Prophets, that goes through over 100 cases of a violation of the Torah, and how Chazal deal with it. These violations appear in Yehoshua, Shoftim, and Shmuel. So when you finish these 100 sections, each chapter is a page or two. When you finish these 100 sections, then you have a very good picture of all of Nevi'im Rishonim. You know, it doesn't skip anything. Right, you're right. It does skip David Basheva. Okay, but it doesn't skip the main characters, and everyone is covered at some point or another. And it's a principal would salivate at a teacher who is able to teach Yehoshua, Shoftim, and Shmuel to that degree and be so organized with it. Right. So make sure they buy the book. All right. So if you can manage to connect this Chumash curriculum with a Nevi'im curriculum at the same time, that is that's gold for you, and they'll love you. And if you're given, let's say, fourth grade to teach, today in today's times, usually the Chumash teacher is not necessarily the same as the Nach teacher, right? So if you can show them that you're up to teaching both, then that is that's something extraordinary. Okay, so I'll review some of those topics that you're likely to be given. Is you have prophet and king, Eliyahu and Elisha. Now, if you're moving to some of the prophets, so I think you can do Mashiach and Tanakh. That's a great course. But I once taught a course called Polemics in Tanakh, which was teaching Mashiach, not just from the standpoint of, let's say, teaching Perek Yud Aleph of Yeshayahu, or Perek Zayin Ches and Tes of Yeshayahu, or Perek Lamed Aleph of Yirmiyahu, or Perek Hey of Micha, but to actually show the Jewish approach to these chapters in light of what the Christians have taught about them. In other words, you're learning about the Jewish eschatological notions of Mashiach by showing where Christianity went wrong. Now, you can say is that it may not be a point in teaching Damash Atashiv Lahem to high school students. Maybe, but it's fascinating and very interesting. So Mashiach in Tanakh is great material. On this, you could just look up Mashiach in Encyclopedia Talmudit, and it's going to give you everything you need to know. Right, but remember, it's Mashiach in Tanakh, not Mashiach in Rambam and Mashiach in Lubavitch. It's Mashiach in Tanakh, and you can be all over the place with a course like this. And I have curriculum on this as well. in everything I'm describing here, there is curriculum available either at YU Torah or YU.edu. And I'm just making it available to you, really, as we're winding down this course. Its purpose is to let you know what kind of resources to use if you do go out there and you're teaching in one of these communities. Look, if you're fortunate, you won't have to teach Tanakh. You'll be able to just get by with teaching Gemara, which you'll be all suited for. But if you don't get to choose this always, right? So hopefully you'll be put into a position where you'll be helping someone write curriculum. Okay, there's a great course that you can teach called Morality of Biblical Characters, where you choose two or three or four or five stories for sometimes where things go wrong, and I think that you can incorporate possibly some of the behavior of the Avos Nimahos in this. I have a curriculum on this. This is a course I've given at YU a number of times. The course used to be called just Biblical Personalities. That was it. And part of the course was on this issue. To think that Chazal just give the even good biblical characters like a David or a Shlomo or a Yaakov or an Avraham, to give them a carte blanche, a pass on everything they do is wrongheaded. That's not the case. That became the case more with some Rishonim. But I'll tell you, Rashi is not free from finding some mistakes in the hands of great biblical characters. Rashi is quick to point out every time Moshe gets angry and gets something wrong as a result. So the point being that we have what to learn from every biblical story, even with someone most of the time where they're doing the thing we can learn from, but sometimes where a mistake is made. Shimshon Frohl Hirsch didn't shy away from pointing these things out. There's some great material in Michtav Me'Eliyahu, there's Mishnas Yaakov, or Yaakov Kamenetsky. Some of these have more realistic approaches than others, but I think, again, a school would love this kind of course. And I think I gave you an example of universalism and particularism in God's message. Judaism is a profoundly particularistic religion, which means that we were told at the very outset, don't intermarry with the Canaanites, you have to get rid of the nations in your midst, and some extremely wicked nations have to be wiped out. And so it was extremely particularistic in some notions. The law against intermarriage is as particularistic as it gets. There's no ancient culture, and perhaps very few modern nations who have our bristle like the observant Jew does at the thought of intermarriage. Of course, once you leave that category of observant Jew, the Jews sort of lost sight of this particularistic mitzvah like they've lost sight of others. In fact, the liberal Jew, and especially this country and in Germany, and in many other places since, already from the middle of the 19th century, saw as the main focus of the Jew to break down those barriers of particularism. Right? There are many, many Jewish thinkers to this day who consider breaking down those mitzvahs like kashrus. Kashrus is a profoundly particularistic ritual that separates us from those who are not keeping our mode of kashrus, right? So especially in the sexual realm, we did this last week when we talked about eight ways that the Torah profoundly differentiates itself from the rest of the world. Okay, so this is a course called Universalism and Particularism, and if you can take this. Usually a high school class, will allow you to have an interplay between three different prophets. That's the magic number. So on a course like this, you can teach all of Yonah. Yonah is a profoundly universalistic kind of book because it relates to a totally foreign nation. And you can take it into Amos. Amos's main point is Rakis Chem Yodatim Mikol Mishpachos Ha'adamah. That I've only known you amongst the nations of the world. That's why I hold you more responsible. And yet, almost at the end of his book, refers to Bnei Israel, So he seems to be saying that a moral Ethiopian is, you have no moral upgrade on if you're acting immorally on any other people who are acting morally. So these are various messages. Then you could take it to Yeshayahu, who's probably the prophet you want to take it. Ki basi base tefil lo yikare l'chol ha'amim. B'nar ro'e lov kol ha'amim. I think this message has been perverted by others to say that we don't have any claim to Israel more than anyone else. That's ridiculous. These prophets did not mean to say that the house of the Lord is equally a house of any other nation, but that if they want to serve God on our terms in these places, so you keep AC based feeling, you create the whole Amim, that's fine. But to say that the Arabs have a right to Harabayas like we do because of this Pasuk is absurd, and Yeshayahu never would have said that. But some Jewish groups came out with that statement some years back. All right, so these are some of the possibilities in the topics to teach. I think there's one that can transcend Tanakh, relationships, siblings and spouses. What a great course! Right? You can teach a chapter about Avram and Sarah's relationship, maybe through chapter 16, maybe through some of chapter 18. You can teach about Yitzchak and Rivka's relationship at the beginning of Parshas Toldos. You can teach some of what that went wrong between Yaakov and the two sisters he was married to. You can talk about Moshe and Tzipora. There's really beautiful stuff to talk about on a course like this. And again, I think it's a lot easier to teach because you hold the cards. You may think it's just easier to teach seven prakim, just do seven prakim and teach pasuk by pasuk. That gets tedious. And the students with their iPads and their they have nose its flesh for an open book and seeing Rashi and the Radak. We have to be more on the ball today, and I think some of these course materials just do the trick. Right? So relationships, siblings, spouses. I think siblings can be a whole course unto itself. Brothers and even sometimes brothers and sisters wherever it exists. Dina and her brothers, Tamar and Amno, and things like that. And it's that we can do even in-laws in there, son-in-laws, father-in-laws, things like that. You can make material out of that. It does take some creativity on your part. So when I want to make things as easy as possible for you, again, I spread myself out as a resource for you. I mentioned the conflict resolution, that's possible. There's also philosophical parshanut. I think that there are excellent works out there, though the work is there for you. You just have to work with it and take it to the chumash of philosophical notions, free will, of course, and reward and punishment and the like, that where you can take that topic and then, competition and cooperation and then teach the story of Cain and Hevel and Migdal Bavel. You teach the topics through the text, and again, you hold the cards, you're the balabas, and you can do it that way. There's also theodicy in Tanakh to teach the concept of good and evil, the concept of how can a benevolent God allow things that are less than benevolent to take place under his watch. So on this, you can teach the wisdom literature. You can teach some sort of prakim in Koheles, which seems to have a very pessimistic approach to these issues. And you can teach some of Mishle. You don't teach the whole book. Just teach, choose your 10 or 15 or 20 psukim, and you show how profoundly optimistic Mishle is, because that's the nature of the proverb. The proverb has to be optimistic, right? The early bird is always going to get the worm. No, sometimes the early bird gets up so early a truck making a delivery runs him over, right? But the nature of a proverb is that you do the right thing at the beginning of the pasuk, you can be sure that something good will happen to you at the end of the pasuk. Right? A stitch in time saves nine. Why not eight? Because nine rhymes with time. But sometimes if you stitch too quickly, you're going to prick yourself and get an infection and die, right? But that's the nature of a proverb. A proverb is always gives everyone what they deserve. Just one pasuk in all of Mishnah that says, Yesh nispeh b'lo ito. Some people die before their time. That's not something for Proverbs, right? That's something for Koheles, right? So, but other than that, all the other hundreds upon hundreds of psukim in Sefer Mishlei are all very, very optimistic in nature. And by optimism, I mean that if you're lazy, so bad things will happen to you. If you're industrious, good things will happen to you. Of course, that just means to be on a when all things are equal and in a perfect world, or in the common world. But sometimes a lazy man folds his hands and has nothing to eat, says the Pasuk in Mishlei. I know a lazy man who folded his hands and made some clever, some lucky choices and won a big lottery, right? And he has what to eat for the rest of his life, even though his hands are full, right? Obviously, you know, we're talking about Mishlei, is talking about the real world and what commonly happens, okay? So, and then there's a book of Tanakh that combines the optimism of Mishlei and the pessimism of Koheles, and that's, of course, Tehillim. Right? Tehillim has some psukim like, Hura Hashem Lamatishan, wake up God while you're sleeping. And, of course, on the other side, Hinei Yishan, Shomer Yisrael, because in different times of our lives, we run through Yasu Yisrani, Yavala, Mavislo, Nisanani. You know, I sometimes wonder, God, you know, what's happening to me, and then it gives me the faith and conviction to know that while God appears to be aloof right now and appears to be sleeping, but I know that the Shomer Yisrael has a plan, and that's my strength right now. So these are things you know. You remember also, this I have found to a great extent now, even while teaching at YU, I'm afraid to say, is that you have a lot of objectives in your class. Of course, you want to teach skills. You want to teach how to read Rashi. You want to teach how to recognize a Shoresh. You want to teach how to navigate certain Mefarshim. And you want to teach the subject matter. I think there's a great challenge today, in addition, and depending on where you're going, this is different types of challenges. But to make sure that you don't lose 50% of your kids to be off the derech, okay? It's really studies are showing now that until the modern Orthodox movement, modern Orthodox day school movement, which you're likely to find yourself teaching in one day, is losing a large chunk. I don't want to give any alarming statistics right now. But too large a chunk of the students by the time you even get to high school, forget about college, right? So we have to convince our kids and parents as much as possible when you go out there. You spend 12 years of sending your kids to yeshiva education. It's considerable expense. And then you send them to out west someplace to a university. The odds are against them coming back with the ideals and the values that you tried to teach them in the first 12 years. So we have to keep this in mind as well. You have to makari of these students while you're teaching them all these things. What an amazing task, right? The reward is great. Lo alacham lachalik more, because you have other teachers you're working with, but there's so much to do. So when you choose these topics, when you choose these issues to talk about in a Nevi'im Achronim class. Then choose wisely. I believe all of these topics I just reviewed is on your front page of your syllabus, and they're all on the table for you. Okay, now I have a curriculum that's ready for you. Nevi'im Rishonim, it's all there for you. Mamash, page by page, that tells you what to do. For Nevi'im Rishonim, you're likely to get Yeshayahu or Yirmiyahu or possibly Hoshea Amos, that's rare, and most probably Yonah. So it's crucial that you leave these lectures here knowing what to appropriately do with these three Nevi'im. Yonah, you just go through the whole thing. I find that once, as young as eighth grade, once you teach them the Mahalach of the Vilna Gaon, it's amazing the creativity that these kids can come up with. Just by a show of hands, you're mostly familiar with the Vilna Gaon's Mahalach to Yonah? Yeah? Okay. Yeah. All right, so Yonah, is once you show that Yonah represents us, mankind, our father Ben Ami. Is to send us out for the easy way out, just to escape, because truth is such a hard commodity that it may be just easier just to, you know, chuck it all and just pursue easier things. So what we do is we escape. We go on to a port of Yaffa, because beauty is a much, much more enticing thing to pursue. We take a ship to Tarshish, which, and if you look in Tanakh, Tarshish is the destination for what makes these people from Ashur all of a sudden listen to this Hebrew prophet out of nowhere? And once Yonah agrees to go and perform his mission, for goodness sakes, why does he just give such a half of an effort with five words? O divine Yonah, ibn Apaches. So here, remember, everything you want to teach, especially in the Nevi'im Achronim, because you're probably teaching it to older students, everything you want to teach is not just the material and the skills, but to keep them on the derech. So crucial to keep them on the derech. And to show them, Yonah struggled with a lot of your struggles. And that's what took him off the derech. Right? Yonah knows that 100 years from now, these people on cold bait will subjugate and exile my people. So I'd rather just disappear and not give to the its people are sinning, and I want you to rehabilitate them so that they can be saved. Now, you're a prophet. I mean, you're a prophet, and you know that. Okay, I see. And you're a prophet, and you know what Germany is going to do to your people in 50 years, right? So I have to go down in history as the one who rehabilitated Germany? God, let them just lift in the air. Let them just be destroyed. I'd rather just disappear and not give them a chance. Right? Now, the fact is, had Yonah just gone straight to Nineveh with his message, they wouldn't have listened to him. They would have laughed him out of the sky, the same way that everybody laughs prophets out of the sky in the Tanakh. Why would it never dawned on you on the one Yom Kippur to wonder why did the Nevi'im have no success? Right? No one listens to Yeshayahu. No one listens to Yirmiyahu. Yechezkel complains about all the false prophets who get everyone's attention. Right? And one of our Hebrew prophets says five lousy words to the people of Nineveh, and they're all wearing sackcloth. What's going on with that? What an irony. The most successful Nabi in Tanakh is the one who wants to fail. What's going on? So you can say that when the story with the sailors happened, when they threw him overboard, they saw that he comes up alive, actually alive, they were willing to listen to. Okay? I don't know if this came up with us, but the fact is that had he just gone straight to perform God's will, there's a powerful message here. Don't look to get off the derech. It's going to get the bag for you, right? So that's what you can do with Yonah, because you were almost certainly asked to teach Yonah probably Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur time, or most curricula of Tzeinu, right? The other two Nevi'im Rishonim, Nevi'im Achronim that you're likely
Internet's not working. It stopped 3 times. Right? It's still working.
I have a full chuberet for you in Yeshayahu with a cover page that teaches the things you would certainly want to do. And everything I would tell you here pretty much equally applies to Yirmiyah, right? Which is you have to have some historical background. Those backgrounds are readily available to you now in all sorts of books. I gave you a name, Landy, L-A-N-D-Y. Just came, we had a book on Megillas Esther last year. He just came out with a comparable book on Yirmiyahu this year. It's written in English, and it has. It's called Parallels and Backgrounds, and it's written from a traditional standpoint. Okay, so you always want to give an historical background of your prophet Nevi'im Achronim, and. Both books are replete with messianic messages. Right? I mentioned before the idea of the polemic with the Christian. Don't think that only Yeshayahu is about this. Yirmiyahu has there are three incredible prophecies in Yirmiyahu, chapter 3, chapter 23, and chapter 31, about Yirmiyahu saying things that will change in the future because of like a new approach to your relationship with God. You can set up a whole course just on these three prakim in Yirmiyahu. They're long prakim, and they're very exciting. And so you want to do anything in the Nevi'im Achronim that touches upon Moshiach, that touches upon hope for the future. Those are obviously very important things. Both books, Yirmiyahu and Yeshayahu, are replete with theodicy, right? Is this the best of all possible worlds that God gave us? And if it's not, whose fault is that? And what? And so these are there are whole prakim in both books that are dedicated to this. Both books deal with false prophets that claim that the real prophet we know because we have their book, they're in the Bible, is himself false. But Yirmiyahu had to deal with this a lot more than Yeshayahu. Sheol speaks about the beatings he suffered because the people didn't want to listen to him. Right? His back is a collecting point for the rods of the enemies of the Jews, the Jewish people who refused to hear his word. Right? So just that the historical background in Yeshayahu, of course, will be Ashur. Historical background in Yirmiyahu will, of course, be Babel. Now, Ashur wrought terrible havoc against Yeshayahu, but he didn't succeed in wiping out the nation. But they were camped around Yerushalayim in chapter 39, and were they died in a sudden and quick smiting from the angel of death. Probably something like the Ebola virus in the camp. Remember, it says in the Parakhelik that the Assyrians incorporated thousands and thousands of harlots and women to service their soldiers on this long siege. And it doesn't take anyone's imagination to know how these viruses could have been spread. Okay, so also there's an incredible prophecy. I think we discussed this maybe when we talked about the broad wall going through Yerushalayim, where Chizkiyahu seems to be rebuked by Yeshayahu for taking down domiciles, actual buildings, people's homes and rooms in order to build the wall. You can see it today. You can see the broad wall. It's tremendous. It goes across a broad spectrum, about 10 amos. And you see that it breaks in between small rooms. So why would he put small rooms on the sides of these walls, if not for the fact that they were there as he was building them, and he was so feverishly trying to finish it, to keep the Assyrians out and from his water supply, that he exercised eminent domain and took out these places. When you teach these things, the students buy right into it. They see how up on the top of these things you are, and it goes a long way. Okay. Of course, both Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu rail against animal sacrifice and ritual performed by people who are immoral. And you see that is usually a strand that can go through all of the Bimachron. Practically everything I just mentioned to you now can be done with Yechezkel as well. Only Yechezkel, but I teach it, so let me just spend a few minutes on it. If you are called upon to teach Yechezkel, what you want to do in a book like this, and you can limit your whole course on this, are the prophecies where Yechezkel serves as a paradigm for the Jewish people. Okay? Yeah, the most famous one that you probably know, because you've learned Maseches Moed Katan in the third parak, where paradoxically some of the things we avoid doing during Chol HaMoed, hence Moed Katan, are also some of the things we avoid doing during Shiva. So the third parak in the Maseches Moed Katan, Beil Magalten, talks about the laws of mourning. And amazingly, much of those laws are derived from chapter 24 of Sefer Yechezkel, where he serves as a paradigm. Yechezkel becomes the people. It's like Ani HaGever in Eicha Perigimel. He becomes the people. What Ketzad? And you can see this in the dry bones and the Chemiskop Mago. You can see this in his prophecies where he's told to shave off the hair of his head. And so there's a big machlokas in the Rishonim, the Dak Ibn Ezra and the Rambam, holding that Chalila v'chalila, that Yechezkel actually did these things. He just represented these things. He did not shave his head. He did not stand in the Valley of Bones. He's a Kohen and bones are tummy. So these things are figurative, as opposed to the more, let's say, literalist kind of commentaries, led by Rashi, to be sure, with Yosef Kara and the like. So they said that these things actually happened. So what happens in chapter 24? Yechezkel is told that his machmari necha is going to be taken. Who is that? That's his wife. Kadosh Baruch Hu Nebuch tells Yechezkel, I want you to eschew all of the conventions of mourning before the people. So much so that whatever Yechezkel is told to do, we do the opposite. Hashem says, wear your tefillin. We learn about the tefillin. At least not the first day of the funeral or during Anidus. Hashem tells him to eat his own food upon returning from the funeral. So we have a minhag. what was that deep food set served for you upon returning from the funeral, known as the Suda Savra. Hashem tells him, greet people and take greetings. We don't greet people during Shiva. Right? Hashem, whatever Hashem tells him to do, we do the opposite. Amazing. Right? So you can ask, what's the point? So this is the point now of Sefer Yecheskel. If you're ever teaching it, you can model an entire course on understanding what I'm about to tell you about, say, about Yecheskel chapter 24. So, people would ask Yecheskel, your wife just died. Why aren't you sitting Shiva? Why are you wearing a tefillin? Why are you running around? Why are you greeting people? Right? Why are you eating your own food? We're supposed to serve you food. And they were asking, these righteous people would say, Yecheskel, what are you doing? So Yecheskel would answer, I'm serving as an example for you. It's not the first time I've done it. The reason why I'm not mourning for my wife is to declare to you that the time is coming soon where you will have lots of mourning to do and you won't be able to. I can mourn my wife. I do have the wherewithal right now to mourn my wife. But Hashem is telling me to act out. But here you get Ben Machlokes. Ibn Ezra, Badak and Rambam say that he didn't actually do these things when his wife died. He just dreamed them and thought of them and then was able to give this message. It's the message that counts. The message being, better change your ways or you won't have the schus of mourning. Right? What do we mean by this? I turn to the very end of Maseches Moed Katan, right? You ever see the last Mishnah that refers to the Mekonanos? Sefer Yirmiyahu, Torah Tisha B'Av. With the Mekonanos, these criers, these women who were hired by family members to cry at the funeral, so that it could bring about a sense of moroseness. People can have the doleful surroundings in order to cry also. Those hired hands weren't even related. They never knew the person who died. By the way, I just want to tell you, this is still done in Eastern Europe. You have these criers who come, they're just hired to cry. The Havdil, if you will, you ever see sometimes at a bar mitzvah or something, we used to have, when we had kiddushes, they would, the family would hire like four or five singers to walk around the kiddush room, or walk around at lunch and just make sure that people are singing Zmiros. You haven't seen this thing, though? I mean, they just walk around the room and make sure we're moved, right? This is the opposite. Where everyone is, these women are hired. It was women, the Konos. Yirmiyahu was saying a similar message. If you want to make sure that your daughters have a job, teach them how to be criers. Teach them how to be Mekonos in the top coast, so that they'll always have a job because there can be plenty of reason for mourning in the coming years. Like, now you want to go into law, go into bankruptcy law. Right? So it's just a sign of things to come, how bad things are getting. So Yecheskel was teaching a message to the people. I'm not mourning for my wife. I'd like to. Hashem is not letting me. So just as I'm not mourning for my wife at a time like this, so too, times will come soon if you don't change your ways where you won't be able to. I use this as Nebuch as an example. My father, at the age of 90, said Shiva for the first time in his life. At the age of 90, my mother. Now, my father had seven siblings and two parents, right? But they didn't give you a chair to sit down on when your siblings went on the other line or when you didn't learn what happened to them when the ghetto was liquidated. Things like that. He didn't have a chance to sit down and get take company. You know what I'm saying? So he never said Shiva, doesn't know where any of them are buried. Right? Or if any of them even were buried. Okay, you get the point. So Yecheskel is warning the people, as is Yirmiyahu, with this message to the Mekonanos. That's how Moed Katan ends. Right? On days that are not quite Yontif, but also not quite cold, like Hanukkah, Purim, and Rosh Chodesh, how these metaphors and the Mekonanos should act at a funeral. So the Gemara, the Mishnah ends though with the pasuk of Avavasid Labo, Pila Hamavis La Netzach, Mechashem, Okim, Gidon Yom.
Avavasid Labo, Pila Hamavis La Netzach, Mechashem, Okim, Gidon Yom.
banish all of death altogether. That's, of course, the blessing of Yeshayahu. Okay? So if you were listening carefully, I just gave you an overview of how to create a curriculum for Yonah, Amos, Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, and Yechezkel. Now, this is, of course, very simplistic. This is about a little less than an hour. I just want to tell you that the materials to do so, to elaborate on this, is available for you for the SD. Okay? Out there for you. You know how to teach this. You'll know how to open up. You just have to, you know, sometimes be guided towards it. Okay? Now, what I want to do is close out today with the VM and then move next time to Ksuba. Right? Most of your work will be in the VM, but there's plenty of information. Gilos, of course, you'll be taught as to teach Kelim and Mishlin, maybe as to teach yoga, as to teach that a few times in high school. And maybe you'll get even Daniel as well. That's a great challenge. Okay, I would like to close with Hatok. Okay. I have a class I've given away, but it's really a Torah. Right? Torah, it's a test of tier. What you want to teach in a course like this is, of course, to start an introduction as to why we do our Torah. First, the curriculum, I did 5 different sources that collect all the different reasons, maybe about 7 great different reasons given. I think that it's probably just one of them that you all probably know from the Shalom, right? If I asked you, why do we say our Torah? We know why we say Torah. It's a pasuk in the Mishpishalach. Understands me, no, without public reading the Torah again. But what is the reason you've heard for why we do a Haftarah?
When they made a decree that we weren't able to learn Torah, we started doing Haftarah.
Right, so that's the Shalom, that says that during the Greek Zeros, that led to the Hanukkah story. During the Greek Zeros, when they were prohibited to study the public reading of the Torah, so the Jews had to be creative in responding to this Zera by incorporating the reading of the Bible. That's certainly one of the reasons that is out there. It's questioned by some of the later compilers of Torah books, because in the various stories we have of Hanukkah, no such configuration appears. Why, if they didn't want us to read Torah, it would be okay with us reading the Nevi'im. Plus, all of the Zeros, you know, Shchodesh, Mila, Shabbos, we don't see that public reading of Torah is among these Zeros. There were, no doubt, in the Talmud, some sources much later, during the Adriatic persecution, etc., public teaching of Torah would be punishable. But the reading of Torah in a shul, behind closed doors, I'm not sure where this is going. But be that as it may, there are many other reasons given, and so it's fair enough for you to give that reason in your class. But I already gave a reason for our Torahs earlier in this discussion, a half hour ago, when discussing Yeshayahu, to say that it was meant to find messianic and redemptive themes that can somehow connect to the Torah portion, in order to show that, like Ha'omer Intches HaMesim in the Torah, is that these messianic points that are made later by prophets, is to say, all the messianological points that go beyond the scope of our human existence of life, that these things are not only discussed in the prophets, but they're also discussed in the Torah. And by connecting that theme to a Nevi'im theme, where we're bringing all this to the Torah, is fully redemptive in its nature, right? The Gemara in the Darim, the Chafei, says in Moleid Chav Yisroel, in the Lamed HaChamish HaKishat Torah, the Sefer Yahushua B'Ba'ad, that we only have the Nevi'im because of sinning, right? So when the Rambam says at the end of the Kos Megillah, that in the future, all the books of Nevi'im and Ksuvim will be made bottled except for Megillah. Rebbe's Esther, it doesn't mean they're going to be thrown out. Chas v'sholom, we still learn things in the Shas that learn Christ's messages from the Sukkah. All of the Bibi and Sukkah. What it means is that the original purpose for acquiring the Bibi and Sukkah will fall away because we will be in such a perfect time. We won't have to teach people to follow the Torah in our hearts. So who needs Mishlei then? Who needs Kohelos then? Why we still need Esther is okay, so he knows it's an interesting thing itself. But for us, right, maybe we'll talk about it next week. But for now, the Haftorah is meant to capture some essential point that can have a tangent that touches upon a redemptive theme. There are different minhagim about which Haftorah is to read. You see that Ashkenazim and Sephardim tend to stress different elements. Sephardim tend to stress the more personal connection to the Haftorah. In other words, I prefer a Moshe, let's say, that connects to a Yirmiyahu, an individual connection, as opposed to the Ashkenazim that seem to prefer to make the national connection of the plight of the Israel in Parshas Shmos, and the plight of the Israel their Shmos Va'era and Bo, right, are all from a very connected corpus between Yishayahu, Yirmiyahu, and Chesed. All three of those Nevi'im are essentially Nevi'im L'Goyim. Large chunks of all three of those books, Yishayahu toward the beginning, Chesed toward the middle, and Yirmiyahu at the very end of his book, describe in length systematic tales of what will happen to a whole host, a whole series, dozens sometimes altogether, of nations of the world. It's a universalistic message. It's a message for them, not just about them. Therefore, Shmos, according to Ashkenazim, is from Yeshayahu's treatment of Egypt. Va'era is Yechezkel's treatment of Egypt. And is Yirmiyahu's treatment of Egypt, right? So we're all covered. So the Sephardim might say, okay, you already have two Haftorahs by here in Bo about what our prophet said about what's going to happen to Egypt. Let me use Shmos to connect to Yirmiyahu, to which Ashkenazim might answer, well, that Haftorah is already a Haftorah of the year, right? The first of the 3 weeks in the summertime. Why do we have to read it twice? Right? You know what I'm saying? Right? Yirmiyahu is already a Haftorah. Okay. All right. So that's in a nutshell Haftorah class, and I present it. I leave it for you to have these levels of creativity. I think we'll close now. I think some people are needed now, so we're finished, and we have one more class next week in Shem at about 12:30.